Sometimes you hear that the craving that causes suffering is the desire for things to be different. That's partially true, partially false. After all, the desire to get better concentration, the desire to get rid of your defilements, to abandon unskillful qualities, develop skillful ones, that's part of the path. And there may be some pain that goes along with that kind of desire. But we come under the pain of what they call the renunciant pain. When you realize that there is a goal that can be attained, that other people have attained, but you haven't attained it yet. It's a painful thought, but it's the kind of thought that can motivate you to practice. You can't practice without that thought. That kind of desire for things to be different should be encouraged. The kind that shouldn't be encouraged is wanting things in the world to be different from what they are. Principles of cause and effect to be different from what they are. And there are cases in the world outside when you can make a change, you can make a good difference. This is why we practice generosity, which is why we practice virtue. That kind of change outside is also useful. But there are times you find yourself presented with raw materials from your past karma. And this can be anything from sight, sound, smells, tastes, tactile sensations, to other people, situations outside that are beyond your control. If you go butting your head against those things, there's a lot of wasted energy and a lot of unnecessary pain. So a lot of discernment lies in seeing where you can make an effective change and where it's worth your efforts and where your efforts are wasted. So right now you can work with your breath. The fact that you've got this body sitting here and that you've got some skillful attitudes in the mind and some else unskillful attitudes in the mind. You work with those. And then you do your best to make them better. And you're going to find out which ones you can make better by trying. The attitude that says everything should be accepted, accepted, is nowhere to be found in the Buddhist teachings. It's certainly not to be found in the forest tradition. Even in cases where the Ajahns are portrayed as specializing in letting go. They let go selectively. There's a story that Ajahn Chah tells when he was invited into the palace one time. And after the meal, the king came to talk to the three Ajahns who had been invited. He was complaining about how he was caught between the soldiers and the students. There were some student demonstrations going on. The soldiers wanted the king to side against the students. The students, of course, wanted the king to side with them. And so he asked the advice. The first two Ajahns basically said, well, practice equanimity. Then Ajahn Chah said, well, equanimity is useful, but you have to know how to apply wisdom at the same time. So you don't just let go. Leave things as they are. But have some good sense about what you should let go and leave alone, and what you really have to work on. Of course, the big work is inside. That's the lesson of right view. We suffer not because of sight, sound, smells, taste, tactile sensations. We suffer because of our own cravings. Craving for sensuality, craving for becoming, craving for non-becoming. These things come from inside. And they come from a long chain of causes inside, which we're going to explore as we meditate. That's where the real suffering is. After all, arahants can live in the world, and they can live in some pretty rough circumstances. Ajahn Mun told Ajahn Phu one time of one rains retreat when his main diet was bananas. It got so that when he smelled his arm smelled like bananas. But the place where I stayed was good for meditating. And that's what matters, is that you find a place where your practice goes well. At the very least, the surroundings are not detrimental to your practice. And that gives you the opportunity to focus inside. This is where the real victory is to be found. All too often we want to gain victory over other people outside. But as the Buddha noted, that kind of victory always leads to karmic results that you're not going to want. You win out over somebody else, they're going to want to get revenge. But if you win out over your defilements, they may sneak around and try to seem to get revenge from the side. But then it's a matter of just fighting them off inside. And there's no bad karma involved. So look at the things leading up to sensual craving, craving for becoming, craving for non-becoming. Sensual craving is your fascination with thinking, thoughts of how you would like sights, sounds, smells, tastes, tactile sensations to be. And this can be in any context. The context of lust, the context of hunger, the context of loneliness, wanting a particular person to come and fill that loneliness, fill that emptiness. You can fantasize about these kind of things. What does it do for you? It just points your desires in all the wrong directions. And this craving for becoming. You have a desired object, person, situation, thing. And then as you think about it, it appears in a world or context of a world. And you can take an identity within that world. Our thoughts can create these types of becoming many, many times in the day. And it's how we get reborn after we have to leave this life. You find that you can't stay here. Something will appear to the mind and appeal to the mind. And all of a sudden you find yourself there, often without having investigated the surroundings too carefully or taken a good look at what you have to become in order to find that thing. In this craving for non-becoming, you have a certain type of becoming, which is that identity in that world of experience, and you don't like it and you'd like to have it destroyed. This too can happen both in the course of daily life and at the moment of death. When you decide that you'd rather go for oblivion, you've tired of the pain of human life, nothing else seems attractive, you just want to wipe things out. Well, as the Buddha discovered, that just leads to more becoming. That's not the way out. But these are the things that we have to watch out for. These are the desires we have to be careful about. And the way to get past them is to go turn around and look at the things that lead up to them. You look at dependent core arising, and it seems daunting, all those factors. And sometimes it seems hard to understand how the Buddha would have come up with that particular order of things. And when you look deeper into the explanation of all the factors, you find that it's quite complex. It's not just a cycle or just a line. It's like many feedback loops. But the important point is that most of the important ones happen prior to sensory contact. In other words, it's how you prepare your mind. And the basic principle is if you bring some knowledge to these different connections, you can turn the connections from a cause of suffering into part of the path away from suffering. And so when we're practicing concentration, we're trying to get back to this level of the events in the mind, just as events in the mind. And see if we can bring some knowledge to them. There's the factor of fabrication, sankhara. Which, in case you have three, you've got the bodily fabrication, the breath, verbal fabrication, how you talk to yourself, mental fabrication, perceptions and feelings. And these lead to bodily actions, verbal actions, mental actions that can have effect for a long, long time. But you want to look at them just as events. So your breath as an event right now. The way you talk to yourself. Try to look at how you talk to yourself and see it in the Buddhist terms. Which part of it is the directed thought, where you choose a topic? Which part is the evaluation, when you start making comments? And just look at it at that level. Choices of topic, comments. Choices of another topic, comments. More comments, more comments. Arguments, discussions, questions, answers. And if you bring some knowledge to these processes, you realize, okay, you can create a state of concentration out of these things. That's a much better use of them than we normally use them. Where the topic is, this person I don't like, and then the comment is why you don't like them and why you're justified in not liking them. Try to take these processes and get some good use out of them, because in bringing knowledge to them doesn't mean you simply watch them. It means you try to manipulate them in a way that leads to something skillful. Same with the factors of name and form. You've got the elements of the body, earth, wind, water, and fire, solidity, energy, coolness, warmth. Just notice how that these four types of things really make up your sense in the body as you feel it from within. So instead of thinking of it as your body, it's just there's warmth, then there's the energy of the breath, there's a sense of solidity, there's coolness. Just see it in those terms. As for the events of the mind, they talk about perceptions and feelings again. Acts of attention, acts of intention, perceptions, I already said perceptions, contact among these things. Just learn how to look at these things on these levels. And a good way to do that is say, I'm going to set up an intention, stay with the breath, and I'm going to pay attention both to the breath and to the mind to see if it's going to stay. And try to use a perception that helps me stay. Thinking of the breath as a whole body process. Your shoulders are breathing. Your arms are breathing. Your ears are breathing. Your forehead is breathing. Every part. See what that does. That makes the breath and the sense of ease that comes when you breathe comfortably easier to spread around. So you look at these things simply as events, but you don't just look. You learn how to manipulate them in a skillful way. The word that Buddha uses for ignorance, avijja, can also mean lack of skill. Avijja, knowledge, can also mean skill. So bring some skill to these factors. And you can find that you can undercut a lot of the things that would lead to those unskillful forms of craving. You've got other things to grab your attention, other things to work with. And you can see very clearly when the mind is going off in the wrong direction because you're more sensitive to these events as they come. And you begin to see, I used to shape them in really unskillful ways. The topics I chose, the comments I made, the perceptions I had, the things I paid attention to, the intentions that I nurtured. I wasn't doing them with much insight, much understanding, and certainly not any skill. And that's why I suffered. But now I can learn the skills around these things. And that's going to make a difference. You begin to see which of your desires actually are skillful desires, the desire for things to be different. When is that skillful? When is it not? You can see in the events that lead up to these things. And you can counteract the ones that would lead to the unskillful desires. So the Buddha maps it all out. Our problem is we're not interested in his map. We have our other maps. The maps of the world as we want it to be. And when it doesn't fit into our map, we get upset. And there are times when we can change the world. And we can do it skillfully. That's why we practice generosity and virtue. That's why the Buddha emphasizes those two activities so much, because those are the best ways to approach the world and make things different from what they are in a skillful way. To create the environment where you have more opportunity to turn around and see what the real problem is, which is inside. Bring some skill to that as well. And that's how you gain victory inside.